You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hi, I'm Dave Musial, owner of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. And this is our biggest sale ever. Buy a new air conditioner or furnace and get 72 months interest-free financing and up to a $4,000 system rebate. Plus, Four Seasons guarantees to beat any competitor's price by up to $1,000, guaranteed. Call today for your free in-home estimate and same-day installation.
For all the right reasons, call 866-4-SEASONS.
There's a recent report, as reported by the Washington Post, that the U.S. is seeing a significant drop in fentanyl overdose death, double digits actually, a decrease of nearly 27% from the previous year. That's the what, that's the outcome. There's been a lot of discussion about the why, and here to help us with that discussion is Daniel Flannery, who is a professor at Case Western University and an expert on the opioid epidemic. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Good afternoon.
So if you would, the significance of this reduction first as an outcome, and then we'll talk about why we think we're seeing this reduction.
Well, first of all, it's good news that we're having a decline. And this is a decline that's occurring pretty consistently across the country with a few minor exceptions. And, you know, the rates were so high for so many years, it was tough to even get small changes up or down in the rates of overdose fatalities. So I don't think there's a singular explanation for it, but I will say that there have been significant efforts over the last 6 to 10 years now, focusing on prevention and harm reduction strategies and education and awareness and surveillance of just tracking what's actually happening in our communities so that we can respond in more near real time to what's going on, which is not what was happening, you know, 10 years ago.
Obviously, during the pandemic years, we saw significant increases, maybe some of the largest increases we've ever seen in history. Do you think it was connected to the amounts of money that were flowing out on the streets and people were getting this free money and, you know, a lot of the addicts were using that money to purchase drugs?
I can't speak for every community around the country, but we did look at this in our community, and we're located in the northern part of Ohio, which is one of the states that's unfortunately been in the top 4 or 5 in overdose death rates per population since the beginning of this epidemic. And we did see some spike in overdose fatalities with the release of the stimulus checks, for example. Even more telling, I think, was that we saw an increase in overdose fatalities occurring in hotels and motels when people were using alone. So that's turned into a bit of a education and awareness effort to say, you know, you can't Narcan yourself if you're using drugs by yourself. And you can't be, you know, nobody's there to call 911 should you pass out. So not using alone has become a big education and awareness message that I think is part of the reason this has helped. But it's also the drug supply question, right? Fentanyl entered our markets in 2014 or 15, and that's a much more powerful drug than cocaine or methamphetamine. And so that was what really drove the increase in fatalities and the spikes. And in our community, we actually saw something called carfentanil in 2017 and 2019, which is an even more powerful version of fentanyl. So a lot of the decline could be traced back to the increased number of seizures that are occurring both at the borders and in local law enforcement, and changes in the drug supply. So we're seeing less fentanyl actually in the supplies right now because of the seizures going up and the shifts in foreign markets in terms of who's making fentanyl and how easily or difficult it is to transport it into the United States.
What's interesting now is that, you know, fentanyl, I'm told, I was reading some HIDTA reports, high-intensity drug trafficking area reports. I was actually the chairman of the Gulf Coast HIDTA for a number of years and the fiscal agent for that organization in my previous life. And fentanyl is still number one in the threat assessment. It's about $1 a pill now. Meth, number two at $1,200 a pound, which is about as cheap as it's probably ever been. What's interesting is, you know, is the identification of how many addicts we actually have in this country. And when you look back 4 or 5 years, you're talking about almost 500,000, maybe a little more than that, that have died as a result of their addiction. And you wonder how much of an impact that has had on the population that's actually using.
Well, first of all, I'm not sure the user population discriminates very significantly between individuals who are unhoused or socioeconomically disadvantaged versus people who are using that have jobs and are employed and still have still are members of an intact family, et cetera. I mean, I think this problem spans all kinds of demographic groups and doesn't discriminate, you know, when someone is addicted. So when someone is a frequent user or a frequent non-fatal overdose person and then becomes a fatality, then this is what the system, you know, is responsible for, potentially failing some of those individuals. So one of the shifts that's occurred, I think, in our community is we're not just focusing on fatal overdose persons, which is an important group to learn from in terms of what they're overdosing from, et cetera. But we're spending more time trying to figure out who are the non-fatal persons. And these are persons that actually are overdosing but survive, and many of them, you know, double-digit times. So getting to those people to prevent them from becoming a fatality is just as much of a task for us as it is to learn from persons who become fatalities. So, yeah, the sheer volume of use is still hard to capture because it's not all known. And even in our own community, we're starting to see people that don't call 911 or EMS or law enforcement because they don't want to be known to the formal systems, or they have community members that have become sort of the self-anointed Narcan distributors out on the streets. So if we're just depending on our emergency departments or law enforcement or EMS to understand who's using and overdosing, I think that's an undercount of who's actually involved with substance use.
In your community, do y'all keep track of the administration of naloxone or Narcan and how many, you know, overdoses are actually averted as a result of the deployment of same?
We do, to the extent that we're able. We have an initiative with our county hospital that's drugs averted, deaths averted with naloxone, Project Dawn. And they distribute tens of thousands of Narcan kits each year through the hospital, through the pharmacies, out on the street, through community events, through EMS. We also have some data around how much Narcan or naloxone does the EMS first responders administer in order for an individual to recover from the overdose. And the amount of naloxone that needs to be administered now is 4 or 5 times greater than what needed to be administered 4 or 5.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Tired of losing power? Feeling powerless? Call Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, Electric today for a free estimate on a whole home standby generator. Never be without power again. Fully installed systems starting at just $99 a month. Power your sump pump, your fridge, your freezer, your garage doors, your heating and cooling, so your home stays safe and comfortable. Four Seasons is the largest and most award-winning Generac dealer in Illinois.
For the right reasons, call 866-4-SEASONS.
5 years ago. So if a 2 milligram dose was effective at bringing someone out of an overdose 4 or 5 years ago, sometimes that person needs 10, 12, 14 grams of naloxone. And sometimes that isn't enough.
So one because of the purity of the fentanyl, right?
The purity, the amount, the sort of growing dependence, habituation to the drug. It's also, in our community, a complicated toxicology of use. So people aren't just using pure fentanyl or cocaine or methamphetamine. They're usually mixing those things, knowingly or unknowingly. So knowing how to respond and how to treat them becomes a much more difficult issue because it's a multi-drug issue. So now you're getting back to the supply and what are the dealers putting out there on the street and what's being added to those mixtures, things like xylazine and nitazenes that are more tranquilizer-type drugs that complicate someone's use and potential recovery.
For the benefit of the listening audience, they're cutting a number of these drugs with like xylazine and others to kind of increase the duration of the high, so to speak.
Yes, or to numb the down, right? To make the coming off of the drug easier to take because it's sort of the physical symptoms that fentanyl and other synthetic opioids kind of create that makes you use it more frequently. So it's a much quicker cycle than someone who historically would take heroin, where they might only need to inject twice a day because the effects of the heroin would last longer. And the downside, you know, coming off the high is less severe. We see with fentanyl in many cases, it's 4 or 5, 6 times a day that some individuals are using in order to avoid some of the physical consequences of the withdrawal.
What is the most recently reported data as it relates to sobriety 2 years post-sobriety? I know at one point in time it was about 9.5 or 10% of folks were still sober 2 years after reaching sobriety. What are we seeing today?
We're seeing a more complicated picture of what recovery looks like and what sustained recovery looks like. And this is probably one of the big next areas that we need to do better in. I think we are doing much better at connecting people to treatment, diverting them to treatment from the criminal justice system, and providing them some treatment when they're ready and able to participate. What we're not very good at is tracking people through their treatment and into whatever sustained recovery might look like. So what I can tell you is that synthetic opioids just act differently than sort of heroin or cocaine or methamphetamine. So people are telling us that their detoxification period isn't long enough, right? If they get into a inpatient treatment facility in order to get treatment, they're really not even detoxed to the point where they're amenable to anything else before their insurance may run out or before the bed becomes unavailable. So I don't think the sobriety in this particular space is any better than it was in the past. And members of the user community will often report to us that they've tried treatment four or five different times. And they're still willing to get treatment, but I don't think we've hit on a gold standard treatment outside of the medically assisted kinds of treatments that individuals often try, like Suboxone, that again helps them with their withdrawal symptoms. That creates other problems in our system because we have dry housing and drug-free kinds of programs that say if you're getting something like Suboxone, you're still considered to be a user. So that those right. treatment options aren't available to you. So we have a way to go
always...
here.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say we have a ways to go here on the back end of this continuum, right? We've done a lot better on the education, awareness, prevention, linkage to care, harm reduction strategies so that people can stay alive. But we're not yet where we need to be in terms of this is what sustained recovery looks like and what we need to do for most individuals to get them there, in my opinion.
I guess one of the, and I would agree, I think one of the unpleasant truths, and love to hear your reaction to this, is that we could actually achieve the gold standard. The question really is do we want to go through the exercise and is there the funding available? It's not cheap. And, you know, when you think about 12-step and a lot of things that we've done to create this kind of behavior modification, I think one of the criticisms has been that these programs are not long enough. And then we fall prey to government funding and financing every time we get a hiccup or there's a downturn in the economy. That happens to be one of the first things that's cut, right?
Our teams have experienced some of those things already in the current climate, right? So a lot of the things that are occurring sort of on the ground, whether that's peer supporters in the community or in the emergency departments that provide some of that support on an ongoing basis, or understanding the effectiveness of different kinds of treatment modalities. You know, I think some of the things we call evidence-based treatments in this space aren't helping people as much as we think they are over time. And you're right, this is the big challenge, is to be able to track individuals over time. And the resources and effort to do that, sometimes the political will isn't there, especially for individuals who think this is a failure of moral character as opposed to a physical addiction for individuals that continue to use. So I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think there's things we know we can do. We're not able to do them because we lack the resources.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times we underestimate the importance of the gateway, how people got to the game, so to speak, of the addiction game. Most, I would say, and you correct me if I'm wrong, got there innocently, right? They might have been under treatment for something else, and next thing you know, they're hooked.
That's certainly at the beginning of all of this. That was a big faction of individuals who were being prescribed pain medications and opioids based on a surgery or an injury, a large number of folks in the construction industry, for example. And then there was a shift from, we're going to stop prescribing these legally because they're addictive, and then people turned to the illicit drug market to get heroin and other things. So that's certainly been a significant portion of individuals in this space. You got to remember, as you do, every individual here is a person. It's not just a number or a statistic. Yeah. And everybody has a different pathway as to how they ended up in this particular situation. It's not as if individuals kind of wake up one day and choose to start using fentanyl. We have a number of people who have overdosed and passed away because they thought they were taking something else, and fentanyl right. was in their ibuprofen or their Adderall that they bought on the street. So part of the education and awareness issue here is that, dealers are becoming very sophisticated in making pills and other things that look like the real deal, and yet you don't know what's in it. And so you can take one dose, and if you're certainly not used to having those kinds of drugs in your system, this can lead to an accidental overdose and end up as a decedent. So there's a lot of pieces and parts to this puzzle that we still need to keep up on. I certainly hesitate to want to think about where we would be at today if we didn't do the things that we've been talking about with test strips and needle exchanges and Narcan distribution and peer supporters and the like. The rates would be much, much higher than they are.
So it's amazing how many. It's amazing how many parents are surprised to hear, you know, with young adult, young kid, well, teenagers in their upper years, that, you know, they're Narcan drivers now, like they had designated drivers for alcohol, right?
And
And they're like, what are you talking about? I said, yeah, it's real. It's out there.
Yeah, there's been some conversation about Narcan parties. You know, there are people that are the designated Narcan providers for a group of people that are using together. That kind of goes up and down with the narrative in the community. But, you know, we're putting Narcan in vending machines and strategic locations and hotels and motels. And, you know, we need to get past the stigma of if you're using these drugs that you don't deserve help.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Daniel Flannery, professor and director of the Center for Violence and Prevention at Case Western University. He's also an expert on the opioid epidemic. We truly appreciate your time and your insight. Have a great week.
Thank you, Noel. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us, folks.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
At Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric, we make home service easy. We guarantee same-day service and installation with no extra charge for nights, weekends, or holidays. Family-owned for 53 years, Four Seasons has over 30,000 five-star Google reviews and an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. For all your plumbing, heating, cooling, and electrical needs, for all the right reasons, call 866-Four Seasons.
For all the right reasons, call 866-Four Seasons.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.